Hello, and welcome to episode 18 of the East Anglian Theatre Podcast. What an odd week it's been. Usually, I don't let the real world permeate the walls of the podcast, but it would almost seem ignorant to not even acknowledge such a significant moment in our history. And for the avoidance of doubt, I'm not talking about Liz Truss. Now, I'm definitely not a monarchist, but I'm not blinkered to the feelings that people may be experiencing during these rather unprecedented times, and that's probably a word that's been overused over the last week or so. Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth has been there in all of our lives, obviously not a central part of it, but someone who every now and then, whether it's the Queen's speech, a royal wedding, perhaps The Crown on Netflix, or the recent Platinum Jubilee celebrations, you're reminded of her presence in some way or other, and depending on how old you are, it's been that way for many decades. I likened her death to a tree falling on the road that you grew up on. It doesn't have a direct impact on you, but you do sense that something is different somehow. It may not bother you at all, but it can be disconcerting for some. And when it comes to the Queen's death, with so much public and shared grief, it may also aggravate some fresh wounds or even older scars in some of us, so people might appear to be feeling the loss a lot harder than you might have anticipated. I guess what I'm trying to say in my rather haphazard way is that we just need to look out for each other. And that's true all the time, of course, but with the bank holiday for the Queen's funeral coming up, why not make some time to check in on the people that you care about? Anyway, enough of that. Being earnest doesn't suit me, along with baseball caps and hot pants. Welcome again to another episode of the podcast. I am your host, Ray Tempesta, and I am merely the chauffeur on this rather bumpy limo ride through the goings-on at theatres across East Anglia. So, belt up, pour yourself some complimentary champagne, ask me what time I finish my shift, and get ready for the latest tour. Our journey takes us along the same route each time, with three stops along the way. The first stop is where I tell you a bit about what I've been up to theatre-wise recently. Sometimes this is a review of a show, but latterly, as my involvement in shows of my own has ramped up, I've not had time, so instead I'll try and give you some salacious tidbits of what's going on behind the scenes. On the second leg of the journey, I stop to pick up a guest. I lock the doors and grill them about their experiences, and usually about whatever production they have to promote. And when I'm not looking, they escape through the sunroof. And the final stop is where I pick out a few shows and audition opportunities in the region that are coming up fairly soon. But before all that, indulge me as I tell you about my social media pages, as if you haven't got enough pointless crap to scroll through already. The East Anglian Theatre Podcast is a Facebook, Twitter and Instagram account, so spread the word for goodness sake. I also have a website, eatpod.co.uk. That's eatpod.co.uk. As well as all previous episodes of the podcast, you can marvel over my hastily assembled words in written format, where I publish my reviews. Oh, and there's also a means to contact me if you'd like to tell me to stop fouling the airwaves with my pitiful nonsense. You can also use it to let me know about any upcoming shows or auditions that you'd like me to mention, or even if you'd like to guest on a future episode. Now, wouldn't that be a treat, eh? Right, now that's the admin stuff taken care of, and on to our first leg of the journey, where in absence of anyone else that cares enough to ask me the question, I ask myself instead, what have I been up to theatre-wise recently? Well, last time I mentioned that I was going to audition for a part in a brand new musical called Yippee-ki-yay, based on Die Hard, for those not in the know. It's been created by the clever team at Open Door Theatre, who themselves are a new company. Now, I don't mind telling you that I was very nervous, as I'm not an experienced singer. However, I went along to audition early on a Sunday afternoon, trundled my way through the audition song, and read through a couple of scenes. And I found out later that evening that I'd been cast, which I was obviously delighted about. Although I have to admit my initial feeling of pride somewhat evaporated when I found out they were still looking for a couple of males to get involved, as I suspect that I was cast purely by virtue of having turned up, rather than down to the quality of my audition. But never mind, we've had a couple of rehearsals so far, and they're a lovely bunch, so I'm really looking forward to getting to know them better and obviously continuing with the rehearsal process. I've also been continuing with rehearsals for The Welkin, which is a really affecting play by Lucy Kirkwood. It's set in 1759 and focuses on a character called Sally Poppy, who has been found guilty for the murder of a child, but she claims to be pregnant in order to win herself a stay of execution. A jury of 12 matrons is then appointed to determine whether she's telling the truth, and the play largely centres around their deliberations. But it's so much more than that, though, and reducing it to a 50-word synopsis is not really sufficient to describe the thoughts and feelings that this play will provoke. The show will be opening in less than a month's time at the Sewell Barn Theatre in Norwich. It's getting pretty exciting seeing it all come together now, and particularly the cast largely operating as a unit. I know it's very easy to say, as I'm in the production and I'm obviously looking to promote it, But were I not involved, it is absolutely a show that I wouldn't want to miss out on. I'm afraid the Sewell Barn Theatre isn't really doing a particularly good job of advertising the show, so there's probably little point looking them up on social media. However, you can purchase tickets via their website, sewellbarn.org, and it's on from the 13th to the 15th of October, and then from the 19th to the 22nd of October, with a matinee on the final Saturday. And finally, I performed at the weekend as part of the Heritage Open Days events. A small group of us delivered a collection of monologues and speeches loosely based around the theme of amazing inventions, as well as a collaborative piece too. It went really, really well, and we raised a fair chunk of money for the Norwich Historic Churches Trust too, which is always nice. The performance was organised and put together by the wonderful Sabrina Poole, who herself beautifully performed a couple of monologues, alongside Kevin Ulrichs, Carol, whose surname eludes me, I'm afraid, and little Cleo, who I believe is only 9 years old, but already has the presence and charisma of a much more experienced performer. She is absolutely one to watch out for. Now, there were a few people that mentioned to me that they were disappointed not to have been able to make it to the event, so I thought by way of consolation, I'd perform one of the pieces for you now. So for anyone that was pleased to have missed out, or indeed diehard fans of Richard III, you might want to skip through the next few minutes. So here goes. Now is the winter of our discontent, made glorious summer by this son of York, and all the clouds that lowered upon our house, in the deep bosom of the ocean buried. Now are our brows bound with victorious wreaths, our bruised arms hung up for monuments, our stern alarums changed to merry meetings, our dreadful marches to delightful measures. Grim-visaged war hath smoothed his wrinkled front, and now instead of mounting barbed steeds to fright the souls of fearful adversaries, he capers nimbly in a lady's chamber to the lascivious pleasing of a lute. But I, that am not shaped for sportive tricks, nor made to court an amorous looking-glass, I that am rudely stamped and want love's majesty to strut before a wanton ambling nymph, I that am curtailed of this fair proportion, cheated of feature by dissembling nature, deformed, unfinished, sent before my time into this breathing world scarce half made up, and so lamely and unfashionable that dogs bark at me as I halt by them. Why, I, in this weak, piping time of peace, have no delight to pass away the time, unless to spy my shadow in the sun and descant upon mine own deformity. And therefore, since I cannot prove a lover to entertain these fair well-spoken days, I am determined to prove a villain and hate the idle pleasures of these days. Plots have I laid, inductions dangerous by drunken prophecies, libels and dreams, to set my brother Clarence and the king in deadly hate the one against the other. And if King Edward be as true and just as I am subtle, false and treacherous, then this day should Clarence closely be mewed up about a prophecy which says that G of Edward's heirs the murderers shall be. Dire thoughts down to my soul. Here Clarence comes.
Thank you, he says to the appreciative audience that he constantly imagines. Hopefully I did it justice, and who knows, perhaps I might even be invited to perform at the event again next year. But now, we pick up a guest on our journey, and with that I'd like to introduce you to an out-of-towner who set up a company called Blue Fire Theatre a few years ago. Her name is Lottie Walker, and she, along with her company, is in the middle of a tour of two separate productions, both of which are set to reach East Anglia by the end of September. And she's here with me now. So without further ado, which is a shame because I do so enjoy and I do, here is an interview with Lottie Walker. Hi there, Lottie. Thanks for taking the time to speak with me. You're here to talk about the upcoming tour of a couple of shows from the company that you're a part of, Blue Fire Theatre Company. But before we get into that, could you explain a bit about the company itself and your part in it?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks very much for having me on. It's a pleasure. So Blue Fire Theatre Company is actually my company. I set it up in 2017, the very end of 2017. And the plan was to focus on historical characters of theatre who aren't normally known to the general public. The modus operandi has changed a little bit since then, but it's the same basic principle. And I purchased all the one-man shows that the late, great Chris Harris wrote. He was a friend of mine, including Kemp's Jig, which is the show that's coming in September, October. And that was the first show that we put out. And then we took another show to the Edinburgh Fringe, which was about Nellie Power, the music hall star, who was a star of music hall, and no one knows who she is now. That's the other show that's coming. So we've done, apart from that, we've done some audio plays, and I'm working on another piece now about a real historical character who's not from the world of theatre. And we also do a podcast that focuses, which is all about, you know, famous people you've never heard of, which is the title of the podcast.
Mm. And as you alluded to, the first of Blue Fire's productions to hit East Anglia is Kemp's Jig. What can you tell us about the play?
It's a one-man show, and it is the true story of Will Kemp, who is sometimes known as Shakespeare's forgotten clown. He's not quite so forgotten now because he crops up in Upstart Crow and all sorts of things. But he had a huge falling out with Shakespeare, but I don't think London was big enough for both their egos, and he decided that he would go off and do a publicity stunt because he was a massive, massive star. It was a bit like, I don't know, Brad Pitt swimming the Channel or something now. So he Morris danced from London to Norwich, and he wrote his diary. I suppose it would have been a travelogue now, would have made the series on the telly, but he wrote the diary and sold that afterwards to make a few extra pennies as well. And this show is based on his own diaries. So it tells his 9 days wonder, as he called it, which actually took him 27 days. But why let the truth get in the way of a good story?
Absolutely. Yeah, I don't think 27-day wonder doesn't have quite the same ring to it.
It doesn't. And what makes it even worse is that more recently people have been doing this. They've been following in his footsteps and they've done it in 9 days straight. Tim Fitzhyam did it. Actually, Morris danced in 9 days straight. And the author and actor Michael Wagg walked it and did that in 9 days just this year. So poor old Will. But I suppose the shoes weren't as good then and the roads weren't quite as good, were they, in 1600?
Absolutely not. And the second of Blue Fire's productions, another famous person we've never heard of, is Mary Lloyd Stole My Life.
Yeah, so that takes us to Victorian Music Hall. And in my other life, I am a tour guide for Clerkenwell and Islington in London. And as part of my exams, I had to do a 10-minute presentation many moons ago about anything to do with Islington. And I thought Mary Lloyd would be really easy because if I got to 7 minutes and then just wanted to sing a song for 3 minutes, it would take the pressure off a little bit. So I did sing the song as well. But what I discovered was that Mary Lloyd was not the first person to sing the song The Boy I Love Is Up in the Gallery, which everybody, one of the few songs that everybody knows from Music Hall and everyone associates with her. And I thought, well, the more interesting story would probably be the person who did first sing it and what became of them. So this is Nellie's story. Nellie was a much, much bigger star than Mary Lloyd. She was a generation before, until Mary Lloyd became the biggest thing on the stage almost ever, until relatively recently. And she died in poverty, and she was quite young when she died, and it was all very sad, really. But what a life she had. She owned houses when people weren't supposed to own houses if they were female. She stood up in court and testified against her husband in a divorce case when she was only 20, and no one expected a woman to do that. She rescued someone at sea off the beach at Southend. So it's full of daring do and excitement. She was a lass, was our Nellie.
Yeah. And I gather that's a story that's quite close to your heart. Obviously, you've quite a passion for music hall, which I have to confess I don't know a great deal about, although probably like most performers, I've unknowingly or inadvertently been exposed to it, usually in panto.
Oh, no, you haven't.
What is it about music hall that fascinates you in particular?
Well, I kind of got interested in it when I was at school, because it was something that we were taught, and a little group of us were taken around the old folks' homes to sing, and that was quite fun. And then someone told me that one of my great grandmothers had worked on the halls, which was really interesting. Only I think that was an urban myth in the family, because I can't find any record of her at all, but it's a nice story. But I did my first professional job in music hall, and I really sort of I like the songs because they're all acting pieces. It's all storytelling. And the songs were all designed with that. They're really long. One of Nelly's songs has got 9 verses in it. I won't be doing that anywhere. Please don't be put off. But the reason for that is they told a story, and they had these really easy choruses in between that the audience could actually get to know. And by the end of it, the audiences were all joining in as well. And of course, that's how they made their money. They would then possibly buy the sheet music, because you couldn't go out and sell your albums or download anything then. And the whole ethos, really, and probably a bad word, but, you know, people think, oh, it's all old fashioned music hall and it's all down at the old Bull and Bush and the good old days and all of that. And if you actually look into it, it was really quite subversive. It was the male impersonators, and Nelly was one of them. That was basically one of the only ways that women could show any power or influence was on the stage. And they used to be up there just mocking all the blokes, which was great, you know. And the chaps were being titillated by the fact that ladies were wearing trousers at the same time. So everybody won. You know, and some of the stories, you know, it was, as I said, it's one of the few places where people could actually gain great wealth from relatively humble beginnings. But it wasn't glamorous. You know, they would be around in hansom cabs doing 4 or 5 shows a night, getting changed in the back of the taxi. And whatever, they start at 6 o'clock and they finish at midnight. It was a hard old life. No pensions or anything like that. No holiday pay.
And in addition to these, the touring productions, you mentioned it earlier, Blue Fire has a podcast called Famous People You've Never Heard Of. Now, I listened to an episode recently, and you definitely made good on your word, as your guests introduced a whole host of performers that I'd never come across. The clue, of course, is in the title, but what else can you tell us about the podcast?
Well, we're kind of ranging a little bit now away from all entertainers in that. But it is mainly about people who have either been in the shadow of other people, like Will Kemp. Everyone knows Shakespeare. Not everybody knows Kemp. Nearly everybody knows Murray Lloyd. Not everybody knows Nellie Power. So we're trying to sort of focus on people who were very successful, very famous in their own time, and are not so well known now, because they've all got stories. And the stories aren't always well told. But you do tend to find that if you find an expert on one of these people, they really know their stuff because they're absolutely passionate about it, because they've had to do a lot of research and find out about it. So I've got some academics that we've interviewed on there who have talked about their pet projects. So we've got some Victorian actress managers. And we've got Ignatius Sancho. Patterson Joseph talks about him. We've had there's a blue plaque on the wall. I think it's a green plaque, actually, because it's a little bit of a joke in London, to the second best tour in London, Chris Fotheringham. So we did a whole episode about Harlots, the series, basically, and the history of all these people and how they were celebrities in their own way. And we had some interesting contributions there, one from Moira Buffini and also Lynn Brown MP, who was doing some campaigning work for sex workers at the time. So it's quite broad and varied. We haven't actually done Will Kemp yet, so we need to do him. But there are lots of music hall people on there, and some more lined up. And some female composers, actually, which is always quite interesting because you don't hear so many of those.
So if there's any Will Kemp enthusiasts out there, for instance, listening, get in touch.
Yeah. Come and chat to me. Yeah.
And just moving on to your own background in performance, I mean, you've mentioned it there. You started out going to old people's homes.
When I was tiny. I was at the... Long before it was a full-time stage school, and as successful as it is now, I started off training Sylvia Young Theatre School, and we used to go out and entertain all the old folks, and that's where I sort of learnt most of the music hall stuff. My first job was in Old Time Music Hall. But I started off training to be a classical singer. I wanted to be an opera singer. But a massive lack of range meant that I couldn't do that, and probably lack of stamina as well, an application. These things happen. So that's basically me. A little bit of variety, a little bit of acting, and now an awful lot of producing. I'm pretty much a one-woman band. I've got a little support network and obviously other actors and what have you, but most of the admin and everything is all me.
Yeah. So was this a career path that was kind of thrust upon you, or was it always the plan?
Well, it was thrust upon me, and then in a good way, because it just sort of all happened by accident. And then I decided that life is too short not to actually own a house, be able to have holidays and all that stuff. So I did actually give the business up for a very long time and then came back into it. I don't think it ever leaves you. So I jacked in the day job and decided to set up the company at the end of 2017. I was working in the city before that, if you can believe it. Most people run off to join the circus. I ran off to join a recruitment consultancy in the city and then came back to the security, what I know best of the theatre. Yeah.
You mentioned about the potential mythical tale of your grandmother being in music hall. Did you have theatrical parents at all?
No, not remotely. No, my dad used to sing in the pub, mainly to clear it at 11 o'clock just to get people out. But no, they didn't. I had an uncle who was a tap dancer, and I've got a couple of cousins who are in the business. So I suppose it's all there somewhere, but look hard enough, I think everyone's got some showbiz in their family, haven't they? And when you think about what music hall was like, I think when my parents were telling me how glamorous it was, that my great-grandmother or whoever she was or may not have even existed was doing this stuff, I think they had visions of it all being at the Palladium and all sequins and feather boas. And really, when you look at what the music halls really were, they were all rooms above pubs. I don't doubt that my ancestors sang in rooms above pubs. I've certainly done that.
Yeah, as is often the case, the reality is a lot less glamorous than you imagine.
It is. They're not all great big concert halls. Although some of them, you know, they did seat 3,000 people and, you know, all those, Mari Lloyd, I think she was only about 4'11", and there were no microphones or anything, and she used to just be heard. It's amazing, you know, with an orchestra and everything. You think, where did those voices come from?
Of your, trying to think of a respectful term, long and varied career, is there a favourite experience or one that you can share with us?
Well, exactly. So they might be two different things, mightn't they? One of the nicest things was actually taking the Kemp show to the Madam Market for the first time. That was really emotional for me because Chris was a great mate and I'd loved his work forever. And when I first met him, he was arranging a show of Kemp. And that was one of the first things that I actually saw him do. And to actually take it to the Mad Market where Will Kemp actually finished his first dance, he danced when he went there, that was very special and emotional for me. And we had Morris dancers there and everything, which was great. And we're hoping to have some this time too. I think on stage, I don't know if I've got a special moment, actually. I think they're, in their own way, they're all special, either good or bad.
Well, speaking of bad, actually, not all productions are successful for many reasons. Is there any particular low points that you've had over the years that you perhaps have learnt from?
Oh, yes. 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago.
Okay.
There you go. I thought I was being really clever and capturing the zeitgeist. We've just come back yesterday from the Edinburgh Fringe and I took three shows up. And one of them was, it was another Chris show, actually. It's called Bee Master. It's a lovely little show.
Chris Harris, is this?
Chris Harris, who wrote the Kemp's Jig.
Kemp's Jig, yeah.
It's a lovely show. It's about a monk who keeps bees. And bees are everywhere at the moment. There is nowhere you go. A garden centre, exhibitions, they're everywhere. I thought, right, this is it. I've cracked the market. I'm going to sell out my first week at Edinburgh with this show. Oh, no, I didn't. I think people are probably so saturated or they just want to see the gardens. It's like no one wanted to see a play about it. So I think the moral to the story is you never know. You can't judge it.
Yeah.
But we did really well on our other 2 weeks, which were things that were much sort of, you know, just better known, and people would have seen them as entertainment, I think. Mm-hmm. I think that is the problem, actually, because I try very hard with what we do to make entertainment and education just go hand in hand. They don't have to be mutually exclusive, but no one wants to go to the theatre to watch a lecture. That's not the point. So I think, you know, that's the lesson learned. It's probably all in the marketing.
Yeah. And so these two productions that are hitting East Anglia, Kemp's Jig and Murray Lloyd's Stole My Life, where are they playing in East Anglia?
So they are. Murray Lloyd's Stole My Life is at the Headgate Theatre in Colchester on the 18th September, Sunday afternoon. Nice cosy little Sunday matinee, so you can get home in time for Pole Dark or whatever's on Sunday nights. And then that is going to the Madam Market on the 29th of September. And Kemp is at the Fisher Theatre in Bungay on Saturday the 17th. And then that will be at the Madam Market on the Wednesday night, the 28th of September. Okay. So I think that's our East Anglian trip completed for this year. But we always like coming back. It's a lovely part of the world.
Hmm. You might not want to talk about these just yet, but I know from the website there's two other productions in development.
Yeah, there are three, actually. So the one that's not on the website yet is the new one that I'm going to do, which is that's a one-woman show about a character from the 1920s, 30s, who was quite a political activist. And that's all I can say about that at the moment, but it's quite exciting. Well, I'm excited anyway. But the other two, we've got Ali Sloper's Half Holiday, which we have actually done as an audio play on the podcast. So you can tune into that. But we're in the process of putting that out on stage as well. And that, Ali Sloper, was the first ever comic cartoon hero. So before Desperate Dan, he was the forerunner to Andy Capp, I suppose.
The old comic strips, do you mean?
The old comic strips, yes. Yeah. So he had his own magazine called The Half Holiday, and he was basically a social climber. So it's all about him doing the season and everything. And there's a whole industry built up around memorabilia and stuff. So that should be quite fun when we get that going. And the other one is called That's the Way to Do It, which surprisingly enough is about Punch and Judy men. And that is a real life dynasty of the Powells. Martin Powell, I think 1760, started his Punch and Judy business. So it's him, and then I think it's his grandson, and then we end, that's the Newburyan Times, and we end just at the time of the First World War, when it's not going terribly well for him, and it spoils nothing for anyone to say that the Punch and Judy doesn't work terribly well, so he becomes a bit of a ventriloquist. And there we are. So yeah, so they're on the go at the moment. And That's the Way to Do It was actually performed for the Queen at Sandringham's. We have much to live up to if it's been done by royal appointment before.
So there's plenty to keep you busy, certainly.
We're certainly keeping busy, and obviously we're keeping going with the podcast. And the next one to come out, which should be out within the next couple of weeks, is about Billy Waters, who was a one-legged retired black busker in the late 1700s. And he's another one who had a whole industry of Toby jugs and pictures and things built up around him. And then poor soul was left entertaining outside the theatre where a play was on about Billy Waters. And the irony of that is horrendous. Yeah. And he ended up in the workhouse. So watch the space for that one.
Yeah, something to look out for. Okay, well, thanks very much for taking the time to speak with me, Lottie. Look forward to seeing Kemp's Jig and Murray Lloyd Stole My Life when they hit East Anglia next month. Yeah, we're still in August, aren't we?
Gosh, next month. It's next month.
Yeah.
Blimey, I best get rehearsing, hadn't I? It's lovely. Thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you. So there we have it. That was the wonderful Lottie Walker from Bluefire Theatre. Now, if you want to catch Lottie herself in action, their production of Murray Lloyd Stole My Life is playing at the Headgate Theatre in Colchester on the 18th of September and the Madam Market in Norwich on the 29th of September. Their other production, Kemp's Jig, comes to East Anglia on the 17th of September at the Fisher Theatre in Bungay and the 28th of September at the Madam Market. Tickets can be purchased direct from the venues, but are also available on their website at bluefiretheatre.co.uk. Now, What else is coming up in the region in the next few weeks? Well, firstly, do you remember the Peterborough Revellers who I interviewed a while back? Well, their next production is Stags and Hens by Willie Russell, for which they're holding auditions on the 22nd of September at the Peterborough and District Bowls Club. As well as performers, they're also happy if you want to be involved backstage, so do get in touch. Also in Peterborough, the Peterborough Operatic and Dramatic Society return with their production of the Tony Award-winning hit musical comedy, the 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee. It's on at the Peterborough Quay Theatre from the 27th of September to the 1st of October. Staying in Cambridgeshire, the Littleport Players adult pantomime Cinderella and the Two Ugly Slags opens next week. It's on for two nights only on the 23rd and 24th of September at the Ex-Servicemen's Club at Ponce Hill in Littleport. Over in Suffolk, Theatre Royal Bury St Edmunds is on the lookout for young performers aged 10 to 18 to be involved in their pantomime, The Legend of Robin Hood. Auditions take place on the 24th of September and there's a sign-up form on their website. And finally, for young performers in Norwich, the Garages Performance Academy is producing a full-scale production of Matilda the Musical next year, and they're looking for new young people to join their ranks ahead of their rehearsals beginning. Again, there's a sign-up form on their website. As usual, I'll post links for the auditions and shows mentioned throughout the weeks on my social media pages. And that, folks, is about all I have time for. Thanks so much for listening to me and Lottie ramble on. Your support is very much appreciated, as always. And tune in next time to hear from Jeremy Fletcher from Sheepish Productions ahead of their East Anglian tour. Until then, take care of yourselves and go watch some theatre. Bye.